You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
It is good to be with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Dana Wright, Sam, I'm Scott. This has not been a good week for Kansas City. With the number of people that all of you know that we are losing, Tom Kane on Monday morning, Cynthia Newsom, it was announced last night, legendary Channel 41 news anchor and reporter, passed away as well.
I just want to read this from Channel 41 and then some thoughts from a dear friend of mine that I think really sum this up before we get to our guest this hour. Channel 41 posted, longtime KSHB 41 news anchor and Kansas City champion, Cynthia Newsom passes away. She passed Tuesday following a courageous battle with cancer, as most of you know. For decades, they write, Cynthia's warmth, grace, and spirit and determination always pulled you in. Quoting here from their general manager, Kathleen Chol, we are heartbroken by the loss of Cynthia Newsom, a beloved member of the KSHB 41 family, for more than four decades. Cynthia often reminded us that life isn't perfect, but life is so, so good. And even in her most difficult moments, she chose gratitude, hope, and service to others. We will remember the light she brought into every life she touched.
Joining us in studio is Elizabeth Alex. You probably recognize the name. She was a longtime anchor on Channel 41. Elizabeth, welcome. It's good to see you.
We are first just so terribly sorry, and you and I were talking about this out in the newsroom. The newsrooms are such, they're little micro cities, and we stand with all of you at 41 and certainly Cynthia's family. We just wish you all peace and grace and love because we know what she meant to you.
Well, I'm one of thousands of people in Kansas City who are grieving Cynthia's loss and who loved her. Just loved her and looked up to her and were inspired by her.
You were at KSHB 17 years.
I was, yeah. It's now, hard to even think about that.
You are now on the other side of that.
I am.
And I guess just give us some thoughts. I think everyone feels a loss like this differently because you do feel like even if you never met Cynthia, you knew her. That warmth, and the word I keep reading all day is grace. Hmm. Everyone is saying she handled her, 15-year battle or something with cancer with such grace.
That is a perfect word. I know, serenity, you mentioned gratitude. She also, many times when I talked to her over these last 15 years, we never even talked about her having cancer. It was other things. And she was very interested in you and what was going on in your life. And she wanted to tell you about awesome ambitions and what Ed, her husband, was doing mm-hmm. in Africa. And Grace was definitely part of it. And she educated about breast cancer, but she just lived every moment to the fullest. And I think that's one of those things that I'll take away from knowing her. And she'll never leave, I think. We'll never be gone.
We were watching an interview with her, I believe from mm-hmm. last year, is that correct? Where the cancer had metastasized.
Yeah.
And it had become brain cancer.
For her brain,
yeah. But yet she still remained strong, still wanted to fight. And I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, I think she wanted to live every day she could. I don't think that I know that. She said that. And she leaned heavily on Ed, who is just the most wonderful guy and a fantastic husband. And she still wanted to help educate others and be there. And as she said, there are a lot of people who are going through what I'm going through, but they may not have someone to be their support. So I want to be there for them, and it's better together. And that's kind of how she viewed it.
She had said, because obviously a very public figure, everybody feels like they know her. And she had said in interviews, I like sharing my story, because I think it helps others who might not have a voice. And so even in her most personal, private hell of a battle she had to have been going through, she was always so upfront and honest and, you know, really got into the details of what she was going through.
You know, I wasn't really all that. I didn't think that was such a great idea when she said she was going to do that. I was like, oh, I felt like I might take some away some of her privacy or But I was 100% wrong, and I was glad in the end that she did it, because I do think she touched a lot of lives and educated a lot of people about breast cancer.
Well, and the key, regardless of whatever issue you're going through, cancer obviously being one of them, it is so inspiring, redeeming, when you know that you're not alone.
It's so helpful. Yeah, and you know, I had a husband who died of cancer. And Cynthia and Ed were right there and just as lovely as they could be and supportive during that period of time. So I think, I know it is important to not be alone. Very important. And I think she did touch a lot of people like that.
They dedicated the newsroom to her in this past year. And so for those, you know, we're starting to see younger and younger faces on the news. We were talking about this the other day. There was some severe weather coverage, and I looked up and I said to Scott,
who is that?
That child looks like he's 15 years old. We're now the old people in the room. But I think, you know, because of that and because of the way she told all stories, not just her own story, but the way that she really reached through the airwaves and touched people in their own living rooms is definitely going to be something that lives on.
Well, it was fun to be there. Keith King and I went to the dedication of the newsroom, mm-hmm. and it is it's a big picture on the wall, beautiful photo of her and her story there. I've never heard of a newsroom being dedicated to anybody. I thought it was a great idea, and she was there, her family was there. Mm-hmm. It was really a lovely, beautiful day.
She's humbled and, mm-hmm. you know. I think probably never wanted it to be about her, but she's just that kind of person. I want to read really quick. My good friend Michelle Robin posted this. Multiple people have reposted this today. And she writes, "My dear Cynthia Newsom, some people pass through our lives and some leave fingerprints on our hearts forever." She says, "Cynthia, our moments together over the past 20 years are etched deeply into our minds. You lived a life overflowing with grace, humor, compassion and purpose, and your presence had a way of shifting the energy in every room you entered. Your laughter, oh, that laughter. It wasn't just heard, it was felt. It lifted spirits, softened hard days, and reminded us not to take life too seriously." She writes, "Your legacy is not only in the things you accomplished, but in the way you made people feel seen, welcomed, valued, and lighter after being with you." And she says, "A special shout out to your amazing husband, Ed, and your loving family who walked beside you with beautiful, unwavering love and strength." I think people also feel like they know Ed, Elizabeth, because she brought him, obviously, as
her
life partner.
Way, yeah.
He was there on television with her explaining it.
Yeah. And, you know, as I said, Keith and I went over to her house not long after she had announced that it had moved to her brain. And she was very funny, too. She had a great sense of humor. I think people think of her as this calm, serene. She was very funny. And I don't know, we were there, and I mentioned Ed was a paratrooper in Vietnam. We saw his medals. I didn't either.
We all know him as the former president of the Kansas City, Missouri School Board.
Real estate, yeah.
Yeah.
He wanted, on his birthday, he wanted to jump out of a plane and do it one more time. And Cynthia's like very happily sitting there smiling, saying, "Yeah, you can do that. You can go to that place in Overland Park." What's the name of that place? That sky thing
God.
That like, lifts you up a little bit?
Yes.
She's like, "We'll do that.
We'll do that."
She had the two of them together were so fun to be around. And it always ended with a prayer whenever you were with them. Mm-hmm. And Ed was usually leading it. And they were very faithful and loving to each other and loving to everybody else.
We'll get to her faith in a minute. But you take a little bit of credit for Ed and Cynthia meeting.
I tried to take all the credit, but I don't think I quite got it. I was on the committee. This is how long ago they met. We were all so young then. Remember Science City and Union Station was closed down. I don't know if you remember that. And they rehabbed it,
we're older than you think.
Like it was at the 1999, 2000 New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the committee to, you know, have the big party, and I had tickets. So I offered some to Cynthia, and she took them and said, "Oh, I'm going to have to find a date." And I think it was Ed's brother who then introduced her to Ed. And I remember seeing him. That was their first date. And they were just glowing when I saw them at the party. And it was all black tie. And so I was like, "Cynthia, you know, if I hadn't given you those tickets, you might not have ever met Ed."
I love it.
So other people claim that they were the ones, but I'm sticking to my story.
Well, we want to thank you for coming in, because I know this is such a heavy day For those of you,
a lot of tears, Dana.
Had the joy of knowing her and working alongside her.
It's hard to. It's really kind of hard to just even all night. I dreamed about her. I thought about it all day. Just it was like hardly even still. I'm not processing it exactly, and I think I join all kinds of people from Kansas City feeling the same.
Before we end, talk about her faith, because she talked about her faith.
Yeah, she definitely talked about her faith, and she did not seem afraid of anything, and she felt she was exactly knew where she was going, and had a lot of, she was a person of prayer, and definitely inspired all the rest of us who, you know, we profess faith, but I don't think my faith is on the level of Cynthia Newsom. And I do think she also, she took on that Awesome Ambitions program. And I think that was also maybe an offshoot of her faith as well.
Mentoring young women who wanted to go into journalism?
Yeah. No, no. They were just whatever they wanted to do in life.
And she young women of color?
Most of them, yes. I think maybe she, maybe it was open to anybody, but most of them were women, girls of color. And she just wanted them to have opportunities, the same opportunities she had. And she started in like 1997. When she first came here, she didn't know people. You know, it's hard to raise money, especially if you have no connections in town. She just kept, she kept going, and she leveraged. She came. She called me one time and said, "You know, I work at Kansas City University Medical School, psychology." She said, "A lot of my girls would like to be doctors. Can you do something?" So our faculty and staff did this whole day program. I just watched the story she did about it, and I definitely know that our staff and students had just as much fun as those girls did, and Cynthia, and that she kind of did that. That was all part of her faith as well, I think. She kind of all put it together. She wove all of us together, and I will miss that. I'll miss that so much.
We're sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry for the whole community's loss. Thanks for talking about her. I think that we don't want to forget her.
Elizabeth Alex, thank you for joining us in studio. Really appreciate your
time. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for the memories. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ.
You know, there's so much reporting out there on just Cynthia's contributions to Kansas City and her life. One of the things that I had forgotten was that her career included on-scene reporting at the Oklahoma City bombing, Scott.
Oh, really? Was she working in Oklahoma City at the time?
Listen to this. The bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, April 19th, remains the most deadly act of domestic terrorism in the history of the United States, according to the Kansas City Star. Cynthia Newsom, then a young Oklahoma City newscaster and reporter, was there. She spoke to some of the survivors, Scott. And it says her interviews from that moment, triggered by the obsessions of bombers Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols, would later be chronicled at the Oklahoma City National Memorial and Museum.
I'll be darned.
And that's the second place I've read that today. And I have never been. My mother has been to that memorial and museum. And so if you're ever in Oklahoma City and you stop by to pay your respects and to see that memorial, you'll see Cynthia Newsom's reporting included in that section of the coverage.
Well, I must confess, I think I've been in the same room as she was, but I never got to meet her.
Started in radio and then moved to television, Scott.
You started in television and moved to radio.
Yep. Absolutely. So may God be with her family and you know, I would say her television family and all of the viewers that felt like family. And it's just kind of a heavy day here. So
it's been a heavy week.
It has.
My mom called last night and, you know, we just got to talking because we have some Memorial Day weekend plans coming up. My brother's coming in town, et cetera. And she said, "I'm really sorry to hear about your friend, Tom."
Okay. Yeah.
And even last night, I mean, it had been 36 hours since I had learned that Tom Kane had passed, and I started getting emotional again.
Yeah.
And just telling my mom a couple of stories. And my mom, you know, she's not one to get emotional. And I think it's because of the generation she grew up in. Right.
Sure.
And she goes, I said, "Man, Mom, I think I'm about to start to cry." She goes, "Well, don't get emotional. Don't cry."
Your mother. Let's not do that now.
Let's not get emotional.
You know, there are so many of you thinking when something like this happens, like, what can I do? What can I do? I think one of the most beautiful things we could all do is support Awesome Ambitions. And it is all spelled out, awesomeambitions.com.
What is that?
Awesomeambitions.com. I thought it had started for young girls, particularly young girls of color, who wanted to get into journalism. I had read, but Elizabeth was saying it's all
for
of
all,
that
all
and more.
Yeah.
Listen to one of the kiddos. She says, Awesome Ambitions helped me get into a great college, and now I am able to volunteer and give back to younger generations. Thank you to all of the volunteers who made it happen. Awesomeambitions.com, and Cynthia's photos right there on the front page with all of these girls. It was founded in 1997. As a way to educate, inspire, and empower young women in the 8th through 12th grade all over Kansas City. This says, while all girls are welcome, our programming is intentionally designed to support the social, emotional, and cultural needs of Black and brown girls, ensuring they are seen, valued, and equipped to succeed. Cynthia Newsom, co-founded by Angela Curry, both of whom were deeply committed to giving back to their community and preparing the next generation of capable leaders.
We have a little clip. Do you mind if I play it?
Please.
From an interview she did with Channel 41. Here's just a portion of it.
It's important to me that we make the right decision. And I've always been very public about my faith and how we, you know, walk in faith and trust in God and believe to try to get the right decision made. For the best outcome. And so, you know, we're going to go with this whole brain radiation therapy. And so that's the excitement part of it. It's very Star Wars. You are on this device, on a platform, and they send the radiation through your brain to get to the tumor, but not just the tumor, also to get to the other breast cancer cells that are in the brain, so we don't have a, you know, less chance of recurrence.
So how often are you going to be going with this radiation therapy?
So it's...
God bless her and her family always, and to all of you listening who felt like family, Cynthia Newsom will live on. Her legacy lives on here in Kansas City with the work she started. The website, again, is awesomeambitions.com, awesomeambitions.com. And we'll be back after this.
A story here from CBS News. A summer job was once a seasonal tradition for millions of American teenagers looking to earn some pocket money, get a taste of the working world. That was then.
Yeah. What?
That was then.
No.
Now businesses are on track to hire a record low number of teens this summer, according to new analysis from Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. Quoting here from Andy Challenger, we are seeing lower participation in the workforce from teenagers, so it is a combination of lower supply of those jobs and less demand from teenagers wanting to work.
Well, I think it's less the teenagers wanting to work and more parents telling their teenagers not to work.
I don't know if that's accurate.
Why?
I feel like we paint with a really broad brush sometimes with our young people. That has not been my experience at all. My kids have always had jobs.
But that's anecdotal.
One of them was hauling mulch the other day. I go, "Where are you?" And he says, I'm delivering mulch. Mm-hmm. He doesn't work for a landscape company. He just went out and started hauling mulch.
In the late 1990s, 2 million teenagers had jobs.
Sure.
In the summer. This summer, 790,000.
That is a lower number.
That is a much lower number.
But I think just to say that the parents are financing everything, it has to be deeper than that.
We've talked about this before on the program, and my opinion remains the same. As soon as that child is ready and willing, they should go out and get a job, whether that's mowing lawns. I mean, I was mowing lawns at the age of 8 to pay for things. Or, you know, you wait till you're 16 and you go get a job at Panera or wherever you – I use Panera because that's where I got my first job at 16. But whenever we talk about it in the past and I express that opinion, the text line lights up. Oh, Sam, kids need to experience their teens.
First job in age.
Oh, gosh. Little Caesar's Pizza.
I, too, worked at Little Caesar's.
14, 15, you know? The only thing I wasn't allowed to do was they would have the dough and it would go through some machine that had a blade on it. And I wasn't allowed to go near that machine because I was too young. But I got to do everything else.
Hmm. Burger King 15.
Are those also not considered entry level teenage jobs anymore? Because the minimum wage has gone up and I'm going to be honest, when I go through fast food, I don't do it very often. It is an older adult.
Yes, it is.
Handing me the food out the window.
That is correct.
It's never a kid.
You're absolutely right.
It's also easier to deal with the older adult most of the time. We've heard the horror stories about dealing with parents when it comes to the classroom. Do you think that's not going to also apply to the workplace?
Well, and one thing you have to take into consideration is when that 16-year-old comes in and wants to fill out an application in June or May.
Yeah.
They're leaving in August. When an older person, you know, somebody in their 30s or 40s, and you're right, Dana, on the occasions where I have gone through a fast food drive-thru,
it's someone who's 40.
It is always somebody who
30.
Is older. That is correct.
Yes.
And so why would you hire someone when they're 16 years old in May only for them to quit their job in August?
Well, but that would have been true 10 years ago or 40 years ago or last year.
But back then, when you were working at Little Caesars, when you were 15, 16 mm-hmm. years old, how old was everybody else?
A little bit older than me, but not much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was probably on the younger end because how do you get there? You have to be able to drive in most cases, right, to have one of those jobs.
Of course.
You know what the number one job was when you and I were growing up?
Well, the job that everybody wanted.
Oh, the sexy job.
Lifeguard.
And I'll be honest, I don't know that that's considered a sexy job anymore.
Really?
No. There were, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the cities were saying we are begging. We are
that's
begging
right. that's
for
right.
kids to apply to these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the prevalence of year-round sports.
Yeah. I just don't know. It's got to be something else than the kids just don't want to work.
I think the kids do want to work.
I think it's part of it.
Well, paying a 16-year-old $15 an hour seems, dare I say, a little bit unreasonable.
Well, it certainly would have been unreasonable when you and I were growing up. We would have thought we were rich.
We would have been rich.
12 years ago, I made $11.25.
Wow. If somebody would pay me $15 an hour when I was 16 years old, I would be driving a Mercedes when I was 17.
Oh, yeah. But I'll tell you, Scott, prices have gone up. I'm not going to say the number, but the mulch hauler, when they told me what they made to haul said mulch, my jaw hit the floor. I was like, well, there's your money for the summer. Don't ask me again for any Uber money or any entertainment money. You know, the salaries have, the job stuff has gone way higher than we ever imagined at our age.
So the story from CBS News goes on to say several factors are contributing to the shift away from summer work for teens, including ongoing economic trends and longer term social shifts. Say that three times fast. Businesses are grappling with economic uncertainty, including sharper, higher energy costs, making them hesitant to staff up. And many entry-level jobs, such as taking orders and providing customer service, are today handled by?
Adults.
AI.
And AI.
Mm. You know, it doesn't key on how few 16-year-olds are getting their driver's license these days.
Which I find fascinating, by the way.
That's a trend
been going on for a while.
Why? Why do kids not want to drive?
I think that's still a broad brush. I think there are more kids that aren't interested in driving now than when we were growing up, you could not wait.
Oh, that was a rite of
to
passage.
Be 14 or 15. And remember, there was that rule that if you were running farm errands, you somehow got grandfathered in to drive earlier. I would come up with a way to work in a farm errand to every single thing I wanted to do all summer. Because
even
I was,
though you weren't running a farm errand.
No, I was driving a Toyota Corolla hatchback.
Got it.
In North Topeka. But if my parents needed milk at the store, I was going to the mall first, and milk comes from a cow. That's a farm errand. Give me the keys.
But wasn't one of your four kids one that didn't want?
No, they all drove.
Oh, they
yep.
all wanted a
they
license.
They all wanted a license.
Okay. But there have been reports that a lot of kids, not a lot, again, painting with a broad brush.
Certainly more than when we were growing up.
Oh, sure. I couldn't wait to drive.
But if all your friends have kids and they have Uber, I'm sorry, but they have Uber.
But you can't get in an Uber until you're 18.
Oh, please. They all Uber.
We can't dismiss everything with the broad brush comment when the statistics are there. I mean, the broad brush is there because the statistics are there.
I think that it's got to be deeper than just the one thing. And I don't know what it is. I really don't.
Well, why is it that in the 1990s, 2 million kids were working in the summer between the ages of 16 and 19, according to this story, and now it's 790,000?
Is it because we feel like we demand so much from them during the school year that this is your time to just relax?
If that is the case, we are the worst parenting generation of all time.
I will tell you this. I always wanted the kids to work. I was happy they were working and making their own money and not hitting me up every 5 minutes for Venmo. Their freshman year in college was the only time I said, I don't want you to have a job. That first year, I said, you need to figure out how this works. Get your bearings. Mm-hmm. Then we'll talk about a job.
Yeah.
That's really the only time.
Well, my parents said the same thing. I was not allowed to work when I was at Nebraska. Guess how I made my beer money?
How did you make your beer money?
Donated plasma.
Scott Parks. Oh my God. That was also a rite of passage, wasn't it?
Once a week.
Yep.
Oh, kids still do it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
My roommate Ronnie and I would go downtown, go to the plasma center.
And when I say that we feel like we expect too much out of them during the school year, I'm not saying we do expect too much out of them, but is there this parental guilt sort of that, you know, when you're shoving them into soccer and dance and gymnastics because they, quote, want to do that, plus the school load, plus the activities, that once June rolls around, let's just take a breath.
For 3 months, they're just supposed to sit around the house and do nothing but go to the pool?
No, but that's what... did you not do that during the summers?
I worked.
When you were not working, where were you? It's got to be... That was what we did for entertainment.
I was at three places. Work, football practice...
Or the pool. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have Andretti's and the fly sky thing but that Elizabeth was talking... We didn't have 10 million different things to do and a cell phone. We literally had... the pool. But, and the pool, by the way, was at the community center. It wasn't even like...
We didn't have the neighborhood pool, that's right.
There wasn't a subdivision pool.
I went to Julie Couch's house.
Yes.
She had a pool
in
her backyard.
You either knew somebody
that's
or
right.
you went to the, quote, community center.
That's right. But aren't we spoiling these kids by not forcing them to get a job in the summer? Forcing them to learn how to balance a checkbook and... Well, not checkbook, but you get my point.
We need to be teaching these kids to write checks.
I mean, I think some of it could play into the lack of boredom. Certainly after a couple of weeks when I was in high school, I was bored. I was eager to go and work because I wanted something to do. And now, I mean, these kids, for the most part, teenagers, have had an iPad strapped to their face since they were two. And have all the video game options in the world. And
I know it's anecdotal, but Sam, I have those kids and they all played Call of Duty. They all did those things, but they're now also fully funked. Two of them are going to graduate school. It's not like, and they worked. And so I feel like when you tell these stories, I'm like, this was not my experience. All their friends had jobs.
It may not have been your experience, but to repeat myself, in the 90s, there were 2 million kids working summer jobs. Now there are 790,000.
And if the statistics bear it out that teens want to work, that the jobs are available. The statistics bear that out. Why aren't they?
I think there are two factors. Number one, I think parents have gotten soft and they don't force their kids to go to work or don't expect them to go to work. And number two, again, repeating myself, if I am a manager or an owner at McDonald's, why am I going to hire a 16-year-old who's going to start in May, leave in August, when for the same price I can hire a 40-year-old who's going to stay forever? 913-586-7798. 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. Let's get to the phones. Greg in Parkville. Greg, good afternoon. Hello.
Good afternoon. Hi. Love your show. First, I want to say that I would never blanket one group altogether. I'm just speaking to my personal experience.
Yeah.
I retired in 2015, and I started working part-time in a deli at Hy-Vee for a couple of years. And they had a lot of turnover with the young guys. This is right around COVID. And they were like 20, 21, and they didn't go to school or trade school. And I said, you know, that's when everybody was hiring. All the trades, the post office, businesses, even the restaurant industry was short of labor. And I told these guys, I would talk to them. And I would say, you know, everybody's hiring. I said, if you don't want to college, go to college. I said, trade school is awesome. Get a job now. You're 20 years old. I said, start investing for the future. I said, you know, get ready for life. And they would tell me, no, I don't want to work more than 20 hours. That's what we get here, and I don't want to work any more than that. And, you know, and I was kind of flabbergasted. Young men, healthy. And I got a Social Security.
Greg, let me stop you.
Yeah, why
Greg?
20 hours?
Yeah, why,
sounds like a Social Security issue.
Pardon me?
Why did they only want to work 20 hours a week?
I think they wanted the free time. They talked a lot about, you know, playing video games and going to the mall. And I mean, I don't know. I was getting ready to say I got a Social Security card at 13. And I don't mean to be bragging, but I wanted to work. I mean, I don't know why. I think what it is, I don't know. I think they don't get guidance, maybe, you know, like from the school guidance counselors and from maybe enough guidance from the parents. I'm not sure why. I really don't. They, you know, they just said they weren't interested. There's too many hours to be working.
Well,
and they didn't go to school.
And I don't want to poo-poo the younger generation. Because we work with a number of them here in the building, Sam included.
Yes.
Sam works harder on this show than anybody else on the show. Logan, next door.
Yep.
Drew, next door. These guys, Rob Brenton, these guys work hard. I don't want to poo-poo the younger generation. I do think they want to work. I think there is a segment of the younger generation that doesn't want to work. But the Sams and the Rob Brentons and the
our kids.
Logan's and Drew. Yeah. Sarah works a lot. Maya works a lot. I know your kids do.
The mulch hauler, by the way.
Is that Willem?
I'm not going to say, but when I found out that's what he was doing, I immediately left the house and got him an iced coffee. And Johnny said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "It's 90 degrees out. He's hauling mulch. No one consulted me about this." I said, "And I'm going to get a coffee anyway. I'm going to go take him one." He just shook his head.
As he should.
Does that mean we're soft? I don't know. I think that means that, like, I care about my child.
When I was a mover in college.
Oh, that is work.
Tell me about it. In a Kansas summer, when it's 100 degrees outside.
Yes.
And you're humping furniture.
Yes.
J.D. Vance, do you know how many times my mom showed up
with iced coffee?
With iced coffee or an ice water or a cold soda?
I know.
Not one single time, nor did I expect her to.
I didn't end up taking him one, but I wanted to.
Why?
I don't know. I said, "Are you all right? Do you want me to bring you anything?" I said, "No, I'm fine. I got my water, got my earbuds in. I'm doing good."
Sam, isn't coffee a diuretic?
Oh, yes, coffee is a diuretic.
That's
it also
what he
dehydrates
needs.
You.
That's what he needs out in the 90-degree weather.
That's right.
Excuse me, can I use your bathroom?
Tiffany in Kansas City. Hello, Tiffany.
Hi.
Hi.
So, I don't know. I mean, I think we're talking about two different things. Are we talking about the kids in high school that could work really all year long? I mean, I was in drill team forensics. I had a job the whole time. Or are we talking about the kids that come back from college who it's really tough to get that, you know, just that couple month job?
Yep.
And internships are paid now. My internship was not paid, but internships are also really hard to get. I just think that there's two different ways to look at it.
We're talking about 16 to 19-year-olds.
So, honestly, that's both, right? That's both.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'll tell you, we forged my birth certificate when I was 15, and I worked at Taco Bell, and I loved it. When I turned 16, I had to fake it. So, I mean,
wait, you forged there, right? Your birth certificate?
Dude, yeah, and my dad was a cop. Yeah, we forged my birth certificate so that I could work at
Taco Smell.
Yeah.
And I got there on my moped. So, I mean, there are jobs to be had, but are they the jobs that they want to do? And are we talking about internships? Or, I mean, 19-year-olds can still be internships.
Yeah, and for girls, Tiffany, you're right. The summer job is the summer nanny job. That's what all the girls do now.
Is they babysit other people's kids?
They and move the children from point A to point B, right? Because because coming home from college, Scott, no one is going to hire you for 12 weeks unless it's lifeguarding or we need someone to help watch the kids.
Jim in Overland Park, we have 30 seconds. Can you do it?
I think I can. When I was a kid, there was for hire signs everywhere. Everybody wanted to hire somebody.
Yeah.
You don't see them anywhere anymore.
All right, man. Got you in. Do appreciate it. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott here on KMBZ.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.